Europe has kind of an interesting system as far as hemp fiber, because they have a grading system that's similar to like beef or meat, you know, as far as like a prime quality that would be for textiles, and then it's graded below that. For our process, round bales work best. Because you're getting longer lengths of fiber that are wrapping around itself, and it's easier to unroll that bale.
Hey guys, it's Mandy with Global Hemp Association. I wanted to say thank you so much for joining. I'm excited about the opportunity to build a relationship and connect this supply chain. I mean, after all, that's why we started the association. Our association was built on the foundation of connecting supply chain, building relationships, and helping you grow your business. Anyone from farmers, manufacturers, and distributors, people that are passionate about the supply chain, and those creating products selling into biofuels, plastics, textiles, construction, and building materials.
Hey, Steve, thank you so much for joining me today. It's good to see you.
Hey, good morning. No, it's great to see you too. Thanks for having me.
You're a little ahead of me. It's noon in New York, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. And we are in a state of emergency right now because of a fun snowstorm that decided to hit us. So if I do disappear for a minute, I'm okay, but probably power, internet, or something went down.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say, let's preface just in case we get hung up on or something happens. It's kind of crazy, but I've got the garbage can. Of course, they're emptying right outside my window, so I apologize for the noise, but I just want to say thank you very much for joining, and thanks to everybody that's listening today. This is a great interview. Steve's been in the industry for quite a while and has quite a few projects going or balls in the air, and specifically focused on the fiber and grain processing right now. And so I'm excited to kind of hear what you're working on, Steve. And in the meantime, I want to remind everybody, if you haven't already, hit the little reminder at the top of your YouTube or LinkedIn channel so that you know when we're going live again. We go live every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday at 10 a.m. Mountain Time or noon Eastern Time. But you can also find all of our events on the Global Hemp Association website, globalhempassociation.org or friendsofhemp.org under the events tab. Where we outline all of our upcoming speakers, live events, and industry events. So I just wanted to let you guys know it's a great resource. And then also, when you log in, and either you're listening live or if you catch the replay, if you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out. Steve will share all of his contact information, and just wanted to use this opportunity to make an introduction for everybody and help the industry grow and connect. And so, Steve, before I talk too much, let us know a little bit about who you are and what were you doing prior to the hemp industry? Like, what really got you into the role you're in now?
So actually it was just, it was agriculture. I grew up out West. I grew up in Las Vegas, but, I was born here in New York, moved out there at a very young age. But I used to come out and visit my family's dairy farm in the area. And that was kind of how I'd spend my summer vacations. I always grew up wanting to be a farmer. So when I got a little older, I decided to take the plunge and move to New York. You know, it's kind of like the reverse of what most people think. You know, a lot of times people want to leave a small town to go to a big city. I wanted to leave a big city and go to a small town. So I kind of, you know, followed that dream of becoming a farmer. And, you know, I mean, it was an interesting path. I mean, it started out to where, you know, I was helping out with some stuff at the family farm, and we started getting livestock and started to do crops. And when New York decided to do the hemp pilot program, I wanted to grow a high quality textile quality hemp fiber. But when I went for the license, you know, Department of Ag and Markets here said that's great, but there's no processors for it. So, you know, I honestly, when I first got into hemp, I thought it was going to be a part-time thing. You know, I mean, I did a lot of research, and, you know, I tried to find where I could get a decorticator, you know, the fiber extraction machine. I never know how to properly talk about a decorticator, because either you know what it is or you don't. I mean, being in the hemp fiber industry. So, I mean, and, you know, I, um, like I said, I figured, I mean, I would sell hay to a lot of local farmers, and some of them were sheep farmers, and a lot of times they would throw away the lower quality wool that they were shearing. So I was like, well, this is kind of great. You know, I could get a decorticator. The fiber processing is similar. I mean, there are some similarities after decortication. And I was like, you know, this is great because I could kind of move the hemp industry forward or work in the hemp industry and be able to help out some of the farmers that were struggling. And, you know, like I said, I figured I could process hemp like as a winter thing, you know, something to shut down the regular farm operations and do that. And, you know, and it just kind of, you know, I worked on a few product ideas. We worked on making heat pellets out of the hemp herd. You know, I mean, I just said we're in a state of emergency because of snowstorm. I always want to figure out how I'm going to heat my house. So it seemed like a viable idea anyways to start making heat pellets. And then, you know, I mean, everyone was talking about dual purpose hemp. You know, so I tried to make a one-stop shop as far as doing grain and fiber cultivars. You know, I joke around about how like Amazon and eBay were started in, you know, the garage or a basement. CNY hemp processing really was started in my laundry room because that was the only room that had 220 power. So I got an oil press, and my first hemp seed oil was actually pressed in the laundry room. So, I mean, I know that's not a GMP facility, but it was good for R&D at the time. I mean, it's just kind of snowballed from there. You know, I mean, everything just moved forward. I mean, I didn't realize at that time there wasn't really that many people that were processing fiber. I mean, even purchasing the equipment, you know, at the time everyone was giving me such a hard time because you had to buy in America. You know, why not buying an American decorticator? And I know there are some great decorticators now that are made, you know, in the United States, but at that time I had to order overseas. You know, I mean, and that was a fun process too. I mean, I was, you know, I'm a novice and just a farmer. And I mean, I had no ideas how to deal with some of the overseas transactions and, I mean, time changes and things like that. It seemed like when I was getting ready to go to bed, everyone was getting ready to go to work over there. So, I mean, I've gotten quite an education, and, you know, we've evolved from so many different products and ideas and things. And, you know, even that first decorticator, I mean, actually I still have it. I use it for demonstrations now, but, it works in reverse of what it was designed, to be able to produce, you know, I don't know, at least a step forward to textile quality hemp fiber. You know, actually we did work for a few years on designing and trying to develop a newer decorticator. You know, and I saw a few problems as far as hemp, you know, hemp fiber processing. So I was trying to solve some of those issues, and we've built a few components of that machine, and hopefully we'll have that prototype up and running sometime soon.
Okay, so New York, talk to me a little bit about what the state of New York is as far as the fiber and grain market. And then will you mind touching a little bit? I know you're also involved on the cannabis side, and I know that I just saw policy change in another state. What is the state of medical rec and fiber and grain in New York?
So the adult use industry, I guess, in New York State is ever evolving. So I mean, even though we're talking about this today, it could be completely different tomorrow, because there are so many policy changes and things like that. You know, I thought that it was kind of crazy because in 2019, you know, there, we had close to 300 acres under contract, under other farmers that grew for us for grain and fiber. You know, and then with adult use or recreational coming into play, I think last year there might have been maybe 50 acres that were grown for grain and fiber, just because everybody kind of hopped on that bandwagon of you know, of THC, you know, higher THC cultivars. So yeah. I mean, it's tough because I am an adult use cultivator. And even I'm not sure as far as what's going on with some of the things. You know, I mean, it's been an interesting adventure, but I mean, fortunately being in the hemp space for a while, you know, sometimes I have to stop and think, okay, what happened in 2018 when the farm bill was signed doing federal legalization? Like, you know, what were some of the tips that we would give ourselves back then? And what were some of the tips that we give people, other people, you know, to help them be a success? So, but it is, it's interesting. You know, that's probably the best way that I can say is that it's interesting.
What are some of the projects that some of the universities are working on? Say, I know you're involved, and what is your involvement look like at both SUNY and is it SUNY Morris?
Morrisville. Yep. SUNY Morrisville. Yep. So actually, I do some work with Cornell. There's, I feel like I've kind of worked with SUNY Morrisville and Cornell, you know, since getting into this industry. Actually, I think I had Cornell help me out with my first business plan when I was first trying to find investment to move some of the projects forward. SUNY Morrisville has a cannabis curriculum, and I do work with them on that. I do sometimes do presentations with the Canna 101 courses, and then sometimes the 301 courses. You know, we've worked on a few grant opportunities, and with Cornell, I've you know, there's been a few research projects that we've worked on together. A lot of great professors over there, a lot of great work being done, a lot of great trials. You know, but I'm also on the agricultural advisory committee for my county. So it really puts me in touch with a lot of farmers in this area, but then also, you know, all across the state. Some of the I don't know. I've had a lot of interesting presentations that I've done in collaboration with Cornell. And, you know, SUNY Morrisville does have some really interesting things that are up and coming with the cannabis space. I don't know what I can or can't say because I, you know, I don't want to misrepresent some of the stuff that they have going on with some of the professors, but definitely keep an eye on SUNY Morrisville with some of the stuff they have going on too.
I've been impressed with their administration and how they have really been all in to create new programs and new opportunities and expand. Mm-hmm. I've had some great conversations with some of their professors in the cannabis program. It's been awesome.
Yeah. And I do think it's kind of fun when I go in and talk to some of the Canna 101 students, you know, because I went to SUNY Morrisville, and I don't know if I should or shouldn't say this, but I mean, it's legal now in New York State, but I know when I walk into those courses, you know, I usually tell those students, I'm like, man, when I went to college here, I was like, I could grow a lot of weed in that greenhouse. And now there is a lot of weed in the greenhouse. So it's kind of cool to see that full circle, you know, as far as, you know, where I went to school and see the developments and still giving back, you know.
It's kind of funny. I can't believe how many times you walk into a dispensary also. And it's like, man, I remember the day when you were hiding out behind the gas station or there were people delivering on the corner, and in a quote unquote legal market in California, right? You still see that, or in certain areas. And so it's just even interesting to see how it's developed since legalization, and how many times I say just what you said. It's like, man, the change is, you know, it's amazing to see, like you said, all the cannabis growing in the greenhouse that you once dreamt about it growing in the greenhouse.
Yeah, we actually had some security issues with our field last year, and it was kind of interesting to see the police walking around that field. You know, I mean, I look back to you know, like the teenage me, and I'm like, wow, I never would have thought I would want to see this, you know. So
I have to tell a funny story because it's just like the most random, but I was tried dating somebody maybe a year and a half ago, and he was really weirded out about dating because he was one that went and eradicated fields years and years ago. And so, you know, he would pull out pictures in his military assault rifle and, you know, uniforms, mm-hmm. and, you know, burning the hemp fields down. And here I'm like, mm-hmm. for it to be grown right back where you're at. Yeah, it's just kind of funny.
Yeah. it's definitely interesting. I would have never imagined, you know, some of the stuff that's happened, and I'm, you know, I'm happy to see things moving forward, you know, especially with hemp and you know, the higher THC cultivars. You know, I never know how to properly represent that because I mean, realistically, it's all cannabis, but, you know, I mean, I love hemp fiber. I mean, that's why we've put so much work into, you know, into that decorticator. And, you know, we've collaborated with another manufacturer with hemp plastics, which that's been an interesting endeavor too. And I mean, you know, I'd love to work towards making cannabis containers. I thought it would be so cool to have, you know, New York State hemp or just hemp in general, supporting the rec or adult use industry by having compostable containers. So, you know, there's a couple of distribution channels that are kind of excited about the idea. You know, hopefully I'm not putting things too, you know, out there too fast, but it's definitely a project that I'm really excited about with the sustainability. And, you know, I have kids and, you know, creating something to leave behind to them, you know, maybe not just a business, but, you know, something better as far as the environment and the planet and, you know, just doing, like I said, doing what I can.
Hey, so talk to me more about this hemp plastic. Where are you in the process? Is it hemp plastic with Glenn and Greg?
You know, and
there's a plastic company, right? And then there, so I always get confused when somebody says, well, we're partnering up with hemp plastic. Is it a, talk to me about how this developed and what does it look like as far as supply chain and, you know, product development, where are you and what do you need from us to help move that project forward from the industry?
So, you know, there are NDAs in place, so sure. I can't say too much, you know, and there are a lot of great, hemp plastic, companies that are, emerging or that are established. You know, and honestly, I think that the biggest issue with hemp plastic would be some of the supply chain. You know, I mean, it's, you know, like the company that I've been working with, they produce hemp plastic drinking straws. And, you know, that's great. I mean, I actually did a whole campaign on LinkedIn talking about, you know, how bad paper straws are. I mean, I did a joke about, you know, are you tired of sucking on a wet toilet paper roll? You know, switch to hemp plastic drinking straws. I don't like hemp paper straws, or not hemp paper straws, but paper straws. I'd love hemp paper straws, but, you know, so, you know,
I'm with you though. Paper straws are gross. And every time I have to deliver them in a drink, because I serve cocktails for a big concert venue during the summer. And every time I'm like, don't leave this too long. It's going to be so gross.
Well, let me know. Happy to send you cases of straws. You know,
Well, and it's a huge concert venue. So it would make sense. And they have gone to eliminating some plastic. We still serve drinks in plastic cups, which I think is the most appetizing thing, but
straws. Yeah, and the company is also, you know, developed hemp plastic utensils, and there are a lot of other great things that are still in the product development phase. Again, I mean, this is a project done in collaboration. You know, and I feel, again, you know, to keep going back to that decorticator, it's just something that I'm excited to work on, you know.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask next, right? Is like those specs into decortication or into your plastic or your offtake agreements. You know, where are you as far as that development? And
So, I mean, you know, there are a few hurdles as far as the hemp fiber industry and the bioplastics industry. I mean, really the hemp fiber industry can trickle over to the hemp plastics, there's just not enough. I mean, even when I talk about, like, we look at, you know, I had 300 acres grown for me in 2019, and then there was barely 50 acres grown in New York State, just, you know, throughout the entire state for fiber, you know, and it's just the decorticator will help. It's kind of one of those things. Like I always talk about that, the field of dreams, you know. And I mean, I had my own field of dreams to where it's like, oh, if you build it, people will come. When I opened my first processing facility, you know, I joke around about my first business plan was 8 pages long, and it was the best business plan, and I was going to be a millionaire within 3 months. And that was a foolish, naive thought, but it was a fun thing to keep the dream going, you know. This decorticator that I designed, it's an ease of operation. It has a nice solid throughput. And the biggest thing is the bale unrolling. And I mentioned ease of operation. I tried to make it to where, you know, one person could operate multiple machines. And that way, you know, if by chance there is a breakdown, because I mean, let's face it, hemp can be a naughty four-letter word, especially in processing with fiber. I mean, it wraps on everything. I joke around because my top grower from 2019, they actually went through multiple combines just because it kept wrapping around the inside when they were harvesting the grain. And I wanted to have hemp shirts made for them that said, I blew up 3 combines and all I got was this t-shirt or something. I mean, don't get me wrong. We take good care of our farmers. You know, I mean, that's,
we don't
that's
want to say that. We don't want to tell farmers that. Yeah. Like, we're going to blow up your environment because I know all your investments are in your equipment.
Yeah, no, a lot of advancements have been made in the equipment and how to outfit your equipment for the harvesting. And, you know, I mean, I kind of backed off on the grain and, you know, again, with like adult use and stuff, like I didn't want to, to get a high quality textile quality fiber, realistically, you need to harvest before it goes to grain. You get a better quality fiber, it's easier to process. And if you're catching it before it goes to seed, then you're catching it before it pollinates. So theoretically, as long as you harvest at a good time before it goes into, you know, its life cycle, you know, we don't have to worry about cross pollination or anything like that. I mean, I've gotten hate mail over the past couple of years as far as cross pollination. I mean, we've never pollinated anyone's field, and I try to do the best that I can to keep that at a minimum. But you know, again, like realistically, we need to scale the industry as far as hemp fiber goes to be able to feed the equipment. I mean, the hardest thing is getting enough herd to go down to, you know, to be able to be processed to go into the bioplastics. Another part of that decorticator is it's actually, 5 or 6 machines. We did talk to some great people also in the industry about classification systems and milling. So, you know, realistically, there's multiple products coming out of this decorticator. You know, we had some issues with the town board with noise and dust and things like that. And then, you know, understanding, you know, deeper as far as, you know, the dust issues and stuff, and then obviously OSHA regulations, but trying to make sure that it is a very safe machine that is going to be efficient and works well. So, you know, and I know there are some great people in New York that are focused on grain, and they want to collaborate as far as a place to have their fiber go. And I'm looking forward to scaling that. I do also work with the New York State Department of Ag and Markets. There's a grain and fiber council that's been established, and we've been having a lot of meetings as far as how to move that industry forward. You know, I mean, I really feel like collaboration is the only way to move forward. I mean, it's a big industry, but it's a small industry. You know, I mean, a lot of us have met each other that have been in this industry for years, and there's really no such thing as competition. You know, and I mean, all it is just breeding business. So we just need to work together.
I was talking with somebody else in the industry that's also processing, that kind of quoted, and I don't know numbers exactly, but hundreds of processors, you know, in regions, let alone across the United States, are going to be needed. And we have handfuls currently. Mm-hmm. And so, like, they're really, like you said, we are at the ground level, that it is collaboration and cooperation versus competition, you know?
I do feel like the past couple of years have been a lot of research and development, and then also, you know, laying that groundwork and developing a nice foundation. Because honestly, what I would love to do is, you know, we're working to scale up the operation, you know, to really, really push a lot of these sustainable products in the Northeast. And I, like I said, I'd love to build this as a solid foundation and make it possibly franchisable. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes the idea of a franchise, but is crazy. But I mean, it makes it easier for other people to be able to get into the industry if we can help, you know, provide the equipment and some of the infrastructure and help, you know, build this to work together.
Okay, so I want to talk a little bit more about that. I think I'm with you, franchise. This has come up a couple of times, and you see people like Franny that's doing it on the CBD side and has had a lot of success. And so I think there's definitely an appetite for it. Fred, I want to say thanks so much for your comments and thanks for listening in. Everybody else, Jennifer, I saw that you were in. Maddie, I saw you stopped in and said hello. Also, Hempitexture won the Grow New York Award and is looking for local fiber. We'll connect you to Maddie if you're not already talking to them. Do you know Maddie Mead over at Hempitexture?
Maddie and Tommy? You know, I think we've tried to connect a couple of different times. I would love to. There's been a lot of people that have said, you know, we should really connect. I would love to because I really love what he has going on. It's funny because I've applied for that Grow New York program a couple of times, but I'm happy to see that the fiber, you know, it was fiber that ultimately got that. So I appreciate that. Yeah, no, I appreciate the work, and I would love to collaborate.
Well, and especially local fiber, right? Like we've said for a long time is, you know, where it's being grown and processed close to the farm is really going to make or break it until we get these high value products that, you know, can really drive or pull the market. So how can people get involved? Who are you looking to, if somebody is in this perfect box as someone to connect with, who are you looking to connect with to take the project to the next level?
You know, so, that's a tough question to answer, to be honest with you, because I don't really know, you know, who checks off boxes, you know, I mean, because there are so many great people out there that I've met so far, and there's so many great people that I'd like to meet. You know, I'm open to networking and collaboration really with anyone. You know, I mean, I joke around about, you know, my investor, you know, you know, sometimes people are like, oh, how'd you meet this person? And I was like, I was just a bad Craigslist ad. I don't even know if Craigslist is still a thing or not. That's probably such a dated joke. But honestly, it was a Facebook group, you know, and I would have never thought, because honestly, when we first started talking, it was, he was just looking for advice on growing hemp. And honestly, I had a really rough day. And I mean, I talked to this person, you know, multiple times a week, you know, just, you know, he's picking my brain about hemp and, you know, asking me about, you know, certain crops that he can put in and stuff to amend the field, to get it ready. Or, you know, and we had talked about planting certain legumes to, you know, put more nitrogen back in the soil to get it ready before he gets a license and everything else. And then, you know, I had a rough day. I met with like four different investors and I was just defeated for the day. And I talked to him and I was like, you know, hey, do you know anyone that wants to invest in hemp? And he said, well, that's why I want to meet you. So, you know, I never know where the opportunities are going to come, you know, and so I'm open to anybody, you know, I mean, and it's, yeah. I look forward to it. I mean, you can reach out through our website or the toll free number or social media. You know, I mean, we're on all the platforms. I haven't done Twitter yet.
I have to give credit because your phone number is 833-247-HEMP. So if you have questions, 833-247-HEMP. I just think it's great. And then CNY processing, right?
CNY hemp processing. Yep. Yeah. And there's a little bit of everything on that website. You know, it's been an interesting adventure. You know, I mean, like I said, I mean, that's really all I can say is as far as, you know, getting into the hemp industry. I mean, I knew it was interesting. I know I use that phrase a lot because I don't really know how to describe it. I mean, I don't want to say crazy because I mean, we're, you know, we're all, Sometimes I think we have to be a little crazy to be in this industry, but
you just call me crazy.
No. It's more of a self-reflection than anything else. When I got into this, like I said, I thought it was going to be a part-time thing. And then, you know, even some of those investors that would turn me down, they would say, well, why don't you get into CBD? There's so much, you know, so much market there. And I said, well, you know, I mean, hemp has 25,000 plus uses, you know, CBD is one. Why don't I focus on the 24,999 other uses? You know, and I would go out and talk with other farmers, even growing for cannabinoids. And, you know, they would say, oh, where do I get this piece of equipment? Where do I get that piece of equipment? And, you know, so I started a retail company, My Hemp Depot, you know, started selling some of the equipment for, you know, for processing. And, you know, I'd love to put the decorticator that we build on that website. And then also, you know, if there's any other equipment manufacturers out there that are looking for, you know, or for an opportunity to be able to sell their equipment, I'm open to opportunities, with that as well. And, you know, then with legalization here in New York State, decided to start doing grow supplies. I mean, honestly, that was more of an endeavor during 2020. And, you know, while people were, you know, avoiding COVID, they were shopping more on Amazon than looking for My Hemp Depot. But, you know, I mean, it's been an adventure. You know, I mean, hemp can be a naughty four-letter word. You know, I mean, we get our social media and Google account shut down. I mean, we can't advertise and things like that. And honestly, even, you know, even with the farm operation, I mean, even though I initially wanted to grow hemp fiber, I saw the opportunity to be able to help out farmers, you know, so I waited a little while on getting that license. But, you know, and then that led to the adult use or rec, you know, which, you know, all of that stuff is on our website, as well as some information about, you know, about hemp, about adult use, about recreational. You know, there are some pictures from the glory days and from the crap days. And, you know, you can keep an eye on our social medias, because there's the good and bad. I'm very transparent. I'll put it all out there.
Can you hear the lawnmower guy outside my window right now?
Yeah, that's
so funny. I can hear you great, but heads up, the lawnmower guy is out here, unfortunately. So talk to me about how if somebody wants to put, as a manufacturer, a product or material on your website, what does that look like? Is it a commission back? Like, what? How does the network get involved to, because I think that a marketplace like this is awesome for the industry.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm open to a lot of different options. You know, I mean, anywhere from a standard markup, you know, to commission sales, to affiliate programs. You know, I mean, I'll do things. I mean, even if it is some kind of like a drop ship type of thing or something, they place the order through us and, you know, they coordinate it. I do have some equipment manufacturers that do that. But yeah, I mean, there are a lot of great, great ideas. There are small companies and big companies that are developing some great equipment, you know, and I just want to do it in collaboration with them. You know, I really want to move this infrastructure. And I mean, even though this larger decorticator, I mean, it's not huge by any means, but I mean, it's a nice benchmark size, as far as going for, you know, we were shooting for about a ton an hour, which from all of our experience, that seems like that's a solid throughput. But we've even talked about making a smaller decorticator that could go to the farmer, that could be out in the field, that might be tractor driven or PTO driven, you know, just to move things forward again. You know, I mean, I feel like one of the biggest things that held the hemp industry back was being illegal. You know, and I mean, when you look at the time frame to where hemp was outlawed, that's really where there was a lot of farmer ingenuity that was taking place, and a lot of the farms and barns, and, you know, a lot of these standards that we use today, and a lot of the farm equipment was developed during that time frame, you know, in people's backyards. So with it being illegal, it really slowed us down. So I mean, it's not necessarily that we have to catch up, but we have to learn from our mistakes and move forward.
on our processing, what's time frame you think to have processing up and going in New York, and what's capacity as far as acres to be able to fulfill the need as well as initial processing? What are you looking at as far as like for farm on the farm level?
Yeah, I mean, like we do some processing, you know, and I've bought quite a few pieces of equipment, you know, all sorts of mills, and I did buy the decorticator, multiple oil presses, pelletizers, because we did do, you know, pelletized hemp for, you know, started to be for heat pellets. And then we talked about doing animal bedding, and then even, you know, possibly storage method for for flower, for cannabinoids. You know, I mean, that's one thing that like the beer industry uses, you know, is pelletized hops, you know, and we thought about doing that. So, I mean, realistically right now we've just slowed down or stopped the processing just so we can move forward on some of the other projects. You know, if you can't tell, I wear a lot of hats. So, I mean, I really needed to be focused on a couple of things as far as moving, you know, moving forward with our prototype decorticator. You know, it's tough to give a timeline, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, the part of me is like, oh, we could be ready in, you know, 3 to 6 months. But also understanding that hemp can be its own animal, you know, especially in processing. I mean, who knows? And honestly, I don't want to tell people that the machine's going to do something that it won't do. So I really want to go through and do a lot of testing to make sure that it'll actually do what I say it's going to do. And, you know, I mean, one avenue that I've been really, really excited about is the bale unrolling system, which that can be a headache. Anyone that has a decorticator, they know that unrolling system can be a crucial part as far as just getting the hemp into the machine. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I want to make sure, because I mean, my name's on this. So I want to make sure that it is what I say it is. And that, I mean, one of the main things that I'll be doing is building spare parts to begin with, because I've seen so many crazy things that hemp wraps around. So.
Okay. So, when you talk about the bale unrolling system, mm-hmm. right, I've heard from processors, right, that the way that the bale is put together, whether it's bound really tight or it's loose, you know, it's a square versus round. What are you finding is ideal for your system? And
so, yeah,
and for
sorry.
The fiber quality, right? I think fiber quality also, it plays a big role in the way that we're prepping it from field to processor.
Yeah. So, I mean, Europe has kind of an interesting system as far as hemp fiber, because they have a grading system that's similar to like beef or meat, you know, as far as like a prime quality that would be for textiles. And then it's, you know, it's graded below that. For our process, round bales work best. Because you're getting longer lengths of fiber that are wrapping around itself, and it's easier to unroll that bale versus the large square bales. You know, and honestly, from some of the experience that I've had, because I still go out and bale hemp. If you check out the farm page, there's pictures of that. And like I said, good days and bad days. I mean, I wonder sometimes what came first, farming or Murphy's Law, because there's some days where it seems like anything that can go wrong will go wrong. I think 2 years ago, we joked around that I need to start making hemp tires, because I think I went through 14 tires that year between trailers and tractors. You know, I don't know. I lost my train of thought on that one, just thinking about all those tires.
I think we were talking about the processing capability for acres or scale at the farm mm-hmm. level.
So I mean, there's a couple of textile manufacturers that I've talked to, some that do have experience in working with hemp. There's actually a great spinning mill here in New York that's been working with hemp fiber for a while. We've actually, you know, worked with them a little bit. That is Bat and Kill Fibers.
Oh,
they're
cool.
They're near the capital region. We've worked with them, and we kind of worked like, you know, forward from our decorticator and backwards from the hemp roven that they were working with. You know, and then there is an up and coming, hemp textile manufacturer, again, NDA in place. So I don't know how much I can or can't say about that one, you know, and you know, so, I would love to scale up to like 10,000 acres, and that's a big number, you know. And I mean, I see some big farms that are out there, you know, I mean, and there are some farms that are several thousand acres, so it's possible, but it is a lot of hemp. You know, I mean, I would love to see an initial 2,000 acres, you know, at least under contract, after our decorticator is built. Again, that could be in collaboration with grain, you know, other grain processors, to where their farmers are looking for a place for their fiber to go. But, you know, we go back to that grading system, and it is a lower quality hemp fiber because, you know, as I mentioned, when it goes to seed, the quality changes because it has to support those grain heads. And plus it is a shorter length. You know, I mean, I've been really excited as far as the lengths of fiber that we've been able to get. You know, when I first started, I was, you know, I would talk about the long lengths of fiber that we were getting out of our decorticator, and they were, you know, 8 to 10 inches in length. And that I thought was a great, you know, great achievement. But then I talked to some of the people in Europe, and, you know, they're getting 80 inches and as far as their long lengths. Which is crazy, but you know, I've been working and like I said, from rebuilding our decorticator, I think we're on the fifth or sixth time now that we've rebuilt this thing, and you know, I am getting 5 to 6 foot lengths of fiber out of that one. There's still a lot more work that needs to be done on it, and that's really where like this decorticator is multiple machines in one. Because it does comb, card, clean, and degum all in one pass, which is exciting. You know, I mean, I really mean the hemp fiber and textile is kind of like my brass ring. You know, I mean, that's what I've been working towards, even though, you know, we are in a lot of different avenues. But I really feel like everything just kind of works together. You know, I mean, between the sales end and being able to, you know, develop this decorticator and build the industry, and also be able to sell that to, you know, it doesn't have to be a processor. It could be a farmer. It could be anyone that really wants to get in the industry and to be able to have the opportunity to have that equipment easily accessible. I mean, somewhat easily accessible. You know, I mean, we're still working out some bugs. I joke around that I need to write a business book called Check Your Shipping Fool, because I think there's plenty of orders I've given out for free because I messed up my shipping.
I did that for a long time. And I went to go ship packages, and they were like, it's double. And I was like, what? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, so I just ate all the profits basically on a whole bunch of stuff I shipped because I did the same thing.
Yeah, when I started the online store, I made it where we were selling globally, you know, and I was like, this is great. We can get our products everywhere. And, you know, there were some of the hemp plastic drinking straws, and we got a very significant order in Australia. And that order cost me five times the cost of the order in the shipping alone. I mean, I still sent it out because I was like, hey, this is exciting, you know. And I mean, and it did turn into a lot more, but I have worked out some of the bugs with the shipping. I mean, I'll do promo codes every once in a while, but I got to keep the lights on. So
yeah, I've definitely. Okay. So I was curious, do you know of any research or projects that are being done in your area, either with SUNY, or Cornell potentially, that are looking at the primary and secondary fiber production, like the quality of fiber, when it's produced, when it switches from fiber to herd production or more herd?
So I know that there have been multiple research projects with both universities. And I mean, they seem to do research that complements each other, even though it's not necessarily done in collaboration. I mean, it is and it isn't. They talk between universities, and you know, I know that SUNY Mooresville had been working on nitrogen trials to better understand the yield as far as the herd and the fiber quality. And I mean, every year we plant in collaboration with SUNY Mooresville a couple of trial fields to where we'll have anywhere from 5 to 9 different cultivars planted in a field, and we do different nitrogen tests. And I know that Cornell has been doing a lot of work as far as yield, not just in grain, but in fiber. There's a couple of great professors. Well, there's a lot of great professors there, but there's a couple that I've talked to a lot more lately, so that I just know more of what's going on with them. But you know, and realistically, I mean, I feel like hemp, you know, grain and fiber is really a more sustainable product, you know, as far as hemp goes. I mean, I agree with all the benefits of cannabinoids, you know, and but, you know, I mean, I just feel like there's that, like, you know, I mentioned before, the 24,999 other uses. There's so many things that, you know, that we could do with that. I mean, we've done a lot of them ourselves. I mean, between, you know, I've worked with hemp as an animal feed, you know, and that actually got me to do some work with the Hemp Feed Coalition. And that was really exciting. I mean, I had beefers at the time, and, you know, I was just pressing so much oil, I had to figure out some sort of use for that seed cake. And, you know, I mean, it was like a scene out of a Disney movie when I threw that seed cake down. And, I mean, it was not just the cows, but birds. I mean, I think I had a couple of raccoons coming out of hiding just to come out and check and see what it was. You know, and that was really exciting. I mean, unfortunately, I did put a little bit too much information out there, and I got some nasty letters from government agencies about not being able to do certain things with hemp as far as feed goes. But, you know, again, that was a couple of years ago. I mean,
like, what are some things you looked at and studied with your cake, and what does the feed market look like in New York? Are you able to feed? I assume not yet. I know Kentucky just opened up, Texas, Montana, there's some other states, but yeah, what does New York look like as far as the feed market?
So, I mean, it's, I guess I got a little gun shy because of the nasty letters I got back then. So I kind of backed off on that one. I mean, I do still have a lot of grain in storage. I mean, I'm renting two grain bins right now, that have a lot of grain in it. And I mean, and honestly, like when I was pressing oil before, you know, with the farm bill being signed, the price dropped so much, I could almost buy hemp seed oil cheaper than I could press it at that point. So I mean, the market's changed a little bit, but again, we've been, you know, into a lot of research and development. You know, and at that time, you know, they said that I could, I can't market it as feed, you know, putting hemp out there. And they even told me what certain animals I could put on the bag. And I was like, well, how am I supposed to market this when I go, you know, to a retailer or a feed store? And, you know, I say, what, you can give it to your animals? Like, I didn't quite know. You know, but I did my own research. You know, like I said, I had beefers. I fed during finishing. So you kind of give them a little bit of a special blend of food, like towards the end, to fatten them up a little bit. And so I would finish with blending in a certain amount of the hemp seed cake. And I mean, I almost want to say it was like a 6% increase in mass, just during that time frame. And it was mass. It wasn't fat. So that was kind of impressive, especially when you're looking at, you know, what the yield of the animal was. And honestly, they were healthier. So then I started doing my own trials, as far as, like what would happen if I fed them, the whole season with this. And, my butcher called me, and I mean, he sounded scared. He was like, Steve, we got to talk. I don't know. Are you sure this is the right animal? Because, I mean, like I said, it was an Angus steer. And he's like, the marbling in this, it looks like Kobe. You know, I couldn't believe the fine ribbons of fat that were in this and the fat structure. And it was such a healthy animal. You know, I mean, it almost looked like a Kobe or Wagyu, beef with an Angus coat, you know, just because of the fat structure. And that was that actually I hit a it varied because there were some, like I fed through the entire lifespan, even later on. There were some to where I would use it as a calf starter. And I mean, I was actually showing in comparison about an 18% increase in mass in those animals. And like I said, it's mass, it's not fat, even though there was, and actually in some ways it was more of a lean meat. I know I gave away some beef to my cousin who's a hunter, and he's like, I've taken deer that have had more fat on this, but I mean, it's just, it was amazing. The, you know, the flavor and there actually was a lot of fat. It was just a finer ribbon of fat. So, you know, and that was, that honestly was really, really exciting. I would save that filet mignon for special occasions. And again, that led me to meet a lot of great people. And like I said, I never know where I'm going to meet someone that will. I mean, I feel like everyone has a benefit to this industry. I mean, there's people that have never grown hemp in their lives, and they have something valuable to put into what this industry has. So
it's pretty exciting. So I've heard, and don't quote me because I don't know what numbers or how much was fed or any of the detail, but I've heard, especially on large feedlots, this increased weight when fed hemp and decreased amount of consumption. And mm-hmm. when we're talking huge lots, that's a big impact on the bottom line of cost and mm-hmm. yeah, let alone quality of meat itself. Like you said, the type of fat or ribboning, it's pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It still is mind-boggling to me that it's, you know, considered grass, you know, generally regarded as safe for us to consume, but mm-hmm. we're still struggling with the cattle.
Well, and I mean, without spiraling down some kind of a crazy conspiracy thing or something like that. I mean, the whole beef industry and things like that can be crazy. You know, I mean, there's certain guidelines, I guess, as far as what those commercial farms can actually feed to stuff. You know, we did have to blend it with other things to kind of make sure that it was a really nice balanced diet. There was more than just hemp to it. That stuff, I mean, I'm happy to collaborate with someone on that project because I would love to move that one forward. But, you know, at least on air, we're just going to say it's going to be proprietary as far as the blend that we had going on. But I'd love to work with someone to have that move forward. There are some great people I've talked to in the industry as well that you know, we've talked about moving that forward. Like I said, I wear enough hats. I just want to focus on fiber and the decorticator and the bioplastics and, yeah, there's a couple more, but you know, whatever. I don't need more hats.
Okay. So I want to dive last question, then we'll jump off because we're about out of time. But I've got a question about that fiber that's coming off of your system. You know, mm-hmm. what's typical? Is it long fiber, short staple fibers? You know, what's the secondary potential processing? Is it something you'll have on site, or are you looking to say send fibers off for degumming, mm-hmm. additional pulping, things like that?
So, I mean, because there are so many uses with the fiber, and I mean, there's going to be a certain amount of breaking as far as the processing goes. I mean, obviously the main goal is going to be those long lengths of fiber. The decorticator that I have now, like I said, I've reworked that and fine tuned it to where I do get those long lengths of fiber, but there is more work that needs to be done. We've done some combing in-house, but the degumming can be a process. You know, trying to work on the mechanical end as far as degumming, I feel is really crucial. At least being able to, you know, move that forward. You know, I went down a rabbit hole with the degumming process and found articles about how it's done overseas in other countries, and you know, and it scared me. You know, I mean, they're using you know, hydrochloric acid and things like that to degum. And I mean, I love supporting the hemp industry. And I, you know, I mean, obviously they, you know, they neutralize the acid before, you know, before it's made into clothing and things like that. But I really feel like a mechanical degumming is the way to go. And that's why this machine, I mean, it's kind of all of that in one, you know, to where we are, combing, carding, degumming, and everything else in one pass. You know, at the end of the machine is really where the long lengths of fiber come out. And the shorter lengths of fiber are separated out that can be used for other things anywhere from, you know, it's we've talked about with another manufacturer as far as graphene to go into, you know, hemp superconductors or batteries or something, insulation, carbon fiber or hemp fiber used for that fiber. You know, insulation is really a hot topic as far as that that fiber industry goes. I mean, I pitched to a couple of paper manufacturers when I first started out, as far as sending the fiber out, you know, as far as working with them. But it was crazy because it was small scale paper, manufacturer, but they were like, oh, we just have a small order of, you know, 80 tons or something. And I was like, there isn't even that much being grown in the United States right now. I can't guarantee that much, that much fiber, you know. I mean, granted that was, tail end of 2018, I think it was 2019. But I mean, you know, we've come a long ways since then. And hopefully, you know, with some of the work that, you know, like I said, that a lot of great people, a lot of processors, farmers, and educators have been doing across New York State, hopefully we can move that forward. And, you know, in the Northeast and the entire country, you know, I mean, honestly, you know, I think that all of North America can be utilized for hemp, as far as, you know, at least being a rotation crop. You know, I mean, I've, you know, I was on the news when my first processing facility opened up. We're now on our third, but, you know, I was on the news and I was all excited about that. And, you know, I went to, meet up with some family and the news was on and everything else. And then like a couple days later, someone sat down next to me and they're like, hey, you're that hemp guy. I want to put in 1,000 acres. And I'm like, no, don't do it. Start with 20 acres. Just try it out with 20 acres, you know what I mean? And we talk about proper crop rotation because I mean, as cool of an idea it is to do, you know, a huge hemp farm and things like that, I really think as far as like biodiversity, you know, and you know, soil health and stuff, I mean, having a crop rotation and proper soil management is really the way to go. So, I mean, having a farm that can put hemp into their rotation is beneficial, at least to take pressure off of other, you know, other agricultural commodities. You know, I mean, milk prices are milk prices, but, you know, and really that's where I try to work with the farmers. I mean, I'm a farmer first, you know, so I understand, you know, I mean, sometimes when I walk into meetings with farmers, they kind of give me that side eye, like, who are you? You're a processor, you know. But when I start getting in, you know, elbow deep into working on their round baler or their tractor or something like that, they realize that, you know, I'm on your side too, you know. I mean,
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, very, very, very cool. I want to real quick remind everybody, we've got two more interviews tomorrow. And so Travis Samuels with Zion Corporation, and then John Lupien to talk about processing. I know that he's got lots of great things going on Thursday. But Steve, are there any shout outs or anybody you want to highlight that are doing great things before we sign off?
Oh boy, I don't know. With about a minute left, I don't know. There's so many people that I've been honored to work with. You know, I mean, obviously SUNY Mooresville, Cornell, even New York State between Department of Ag and Markets, Office of Cannabis Management. You know, all the farmers that have grown for me, all the farmers that are gonna grow for me, all the great processors. And I mean, honestly, it's like I said, it's not just New York State. I mean, when I started CNY Hemp Processing, it stands for Central New York, but I mean, really it's grown to so much more to where, you know, I enjoy working with people all across the country. So.
I love it. Well, I wanted to, Patagonia, I've got to give a huge shout out to them, their team, their workwear team specifically. Hemp is a main material for them, or a main fiber in their workwear and their gear. And they partnered up and gifted jackets and overalls and pants to our members within the industry. And so I just want to say, for those of you that didn't get them or that did, take pictures, send it in. Let's share and give them a big thank you. It really was out of effort to say thank you for all your hard work. Don't give up. The hemp industry really does have in market. We've just got to work together to develop it. And so I just want to say thank you very much for everything that you've done. And if we missed you, we'll be sure we get you around the next time. Watch out for our emails. There's little snippets in there. But we probably had about 30 members submit orders. And I've seen quite a few pictures come in. And so they'll also be at NOCO this year, highlighting some of their gear and their equipment and stuff. So bring your wallets, come buy some hemp workwear. It's awesome. I'm obsessed with, I've seen a few different hoodies and jackets that people have gotten. And so, I'm really thankful. But Steve, if there's anything we can do to support you, I'd love to. I'd love to come up to New York. I'd love to see your area, support you where I can. So let's stay in touch. But anything else before we log off?
No, that's it. I look forward to continuing working with you.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for your time today. And thank you, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you. Have a good day.